Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
It's Ryan Recker, Overnight America, and time for...
Tell me something good.
You got something good you'd like to share? That could be anything good, really. Things are just a little bit slower on a Sunday night. Now, what can you do? I don't think too many people are excited to get back to things on Monday. Right? Right. But, go ahead, share something good with us. 314-436-7900. Or 800-925-1120. On that first one, you can actually text us, kind of like Jerome, who texted in what looks like a dog. I'm going to guess a golden retriever who mated with a dachshund wearing what looks like an army jumpsuit with boots and a little helmet. Too cute. I guess that's something good on its own. All right, I got a couple of good stories to share with you. So on... I'm going to say Friday this was posted. Yeah. On Friday, Brett Bloom did a really good write-up. Said St. Louis might be home to the next world chess champion. A man who makes his home right here in St. Louis could be the next world champion. His, from West Central ends, Fabiano Caruana will be going up against the current world champion, Magnus Carlsen, in Norway in a series of 12 matches. They're getting chess fans around the world all worked up. All worked up. You know, this one world champion right now, Carlsen, has been the world champion for a long time. A long time. So the showdown's being held in London. Fabiano, renowned for remaining cool under pressure. Cool as a cucumber. Carlsen may be losing his cool as of late, as part of this article they talk about. He ran up several wins in a row. And the 2018 Cup here in St. Louis showed that there's a clear chance he could be a challenger. He wanted to be a contender. Now he's over. So I checked an update out since that was Friday. So far, they've played two games. And then they took a rest day on Sunday. They're going to play game three today on Monday. Magnus Carlsen forced to hold on for game two draw versus Fabiano here as it happened. So this is the write-up they had. So apparently, Fabiano, who has made to scratch and claw over several punishing hours for a game draw in number one. You're telling me it took 7 hours to do one game of chess on Friday? 7 hours? Whew. That must have been riveting. I'm not a chess fan. I can't say I played chess all that much. We used to play when, you know, we were younger in grade school and high school when we thought, oh, we're so smart, we play chess. Look at us. We know how to move these pieces and parts. I wouldn't say I was ever really good at it by any means. I'm more of a checkers guy myself. No, I don't play either. But I know how to play. And I've never really wanted to learn how to play better. It's just, you know, something you would do if you had time and you're bored or whatever. What happened here, apparently a 7 hour match, your brain must be working overtime playing against someone matched like that. The American challenger played with speed and confidence throughout, denying Carlsen any winning chances. In the end, Carlsen held to hold a pawn down rook endgame, perhaps fortunate that he agreed to draw instead of grinding away another 50 or so moves in retribution of Carlsen's taxing endgame strategy. Both players get the day of rest. Game three happening on Monday. This is what Carlsen said, the current world champion who's taken on here from St. Louis, what could be the next world chess champion. Our buddy, Fabiano. I can't say our buddy, I've never met him. But Carlsen said, he played a completely new move that actually doesn't look natural to me. I have to look at it later. It's full of surprises. And I'm looking at the rundown in The Guardian. They did like a, they're like a running blog. Tell me how exciting this sounds. Like here, let me me go back one, and I'll show you what this commentary looks like if you're a chess fan. Now, if you are a chess fan and you haven't watched this, and you have the seven-hour chess match on DVR, let you know there's a spoiler alert here. So lots of action in the past few minutes. The sequence of move goes 33, KG2, E5, 34, RB4, F5, 35, RB6, KE6, 36, D7+, and it goes on. There's a long string of all of these moves. You have to be a certified genius to be able to, in your mind, map all of these things out as it's written or as I'm telling you on the radio. And you can watch these too. The broadcast side, here in St. Louis, we have an awesome chess community. It doesn't surprise me that we could have the next world chess champion. What does surprise me is that there's not enough people that really know about it. We have one of the world chess hubs here in St. Louis. And on top of all of that, they do some really amazing broadcasting. Even though they're overseas, I think this is in London, even though they're playing there, you can look up the organization here in St. Louis. And from that, you can watch them do their broadcasting, live videos on YouTube, streaming online. And from there, you're able to, it's almost like watching ESPN, except more sophisticated. You know, it's not all flashy and everything like that, but they do such a great job broadcasting these things. Definitely worth checking out if you haven't seen it already. I hope he wins. Good luck to him. Who knows? Maybe he'll be able to win it. You know, I had to look this up on The Guardian, too, at the very end. Okay, for those of you just coming aboard, Carlsen is defending the title he's held for the past 5 years against Brooklyn-bred Fabiano here, who is looking to become the first American to win the world title since Bobby Fischer in 1972. He lives here in St. Louis, but they call him Brooklyn-bred. He's 27 years old, ranked number one for 8 straight years, and considered the world's best player even before he defeated the person for the title in 2013. Fabiano, 26 years old, ranked number 2, having earned his place by the table by winning his matches in the tournament in March. So number 1, number 2 going at it. Battle of the champions right here. So what happens if they just draw all the way through? Boxing match? Boxing match. Oh, I'd love to see that. You know, there is another interview. We had so many different guests on this past weekend because of the election. I wanted to air this one. It's a book called Consider the Evidence, author Dan Buttafuoco. Really cool way to examine the New Testament. He says, examines eyewitness testimony in defense of the reliability of the New Testament. Our interview with Dan coming up next on Overnight America, KMOX. Joining us now is the author of Consider the Evidence, a trial lawyer examines eyewitness testimony in defense of the reliability of the New Testament. Dan Buttafuoco, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you, Ryan. It's good to be here.
So let's talk about the very start. Why did you decide to examine the Bible this way?
Well, it all stems out of a cocktail party, believe it or not, about 20 years ago, where my brother married into a family of another trial lawyer like myself. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was a gentleman I knew. I tried cases against. Corners me in the elevator one day at court and says, "We're going to be family." So it turns out that we're going to his house for sort of an engagement party. And we get there, and I find out for the first time that my colleague is an atheist, and we get into a debate, and the party immediately splits into two. Mm-hmm. And there's my corner and his corner, and we're sort of talking about God and the Bible. And I realized that everyone was really paying attention. So I felt like I made some good points, and I thought he made some good points, and I left the party sort of feeling that, you know what, while I know I'm a really good lawyer, I didn't feel like I was a really good lawyer for the cause, for the cause of the kingdom right then and there. And I said, you know, I have to start studying up on this because we're supposed to be able to give a defense for what we believe. So that led me on a 20-year journey, and the next thing you know, I've studied under Ravi Zacharias, I got a master's degree in theology, and I decided that I was going to be really interested in apologetics. So I engage in apologetics, and since then, my friend has said to me, "I can't even talk to you anymore." He says, "You demolish all my arguments." And I'm not saved yet, but, you know, it's just one of those things. You know, God changes the heart, but I just try to remove objections to the gospel.
Yeah. And part of that is just opening conversations with people. I think sometimes when you get into it, what you see online is that people will get heated whenever they have arguments. And one of the problems that you have with online conversations is that you can't really understand the tone someone's coming at it. So you could have a conversation with someone, they could misinterpret what you're trying to say or what the tone is, goes in the completely opposite direction, and then whatever you say, as valid as it may be, completely ignored or rejected. So this has got to help being a trial lawyer, being able to talk to people face-to-face, have these sort of conversations in a way that could bring some positive understanding to the way they see it.
Yeah, well, I think that's the key. You know, the goal of apologetics is not to win the argument, it's to win the person. So, you know, when you speak with people, especially if you're a trained lawyer, an advocate, as I am, we know not to take these things seriously in the sense of taking them personally. You know, absolutely, the topic is serious, but, you know, we don't get in each other's faces, and it's not usually done with hard feelings. Lawyers are used to bantering. It's sort of the way boxers would box in a ring, and then after you see them hug, like, that may seem weird to people, but that's exactly how lawyers are. Guys that we've, like, killed each other in the courtroom, we go out and, you know, have a beer afterwards and laugh, you know?
Yeah.
So it's sort of, that's the way it is. You know, you learn to deal with the topic and the issue rather than attacking the person.
Yeah. Author Dan Buttafuoco, Consider the Evidence, a Trial Lawyer Examines Eyewitness Testimony in Defense of the Reliability of the New Testament. When you say the eyewitness testimony, what do you mean by that?
Well, the Bible is really important as a document, as a source document for the Christian faith, and I think it's often overlooked. But today we emphasize the emotional aspects of the faith, you know, what we feel in church when we have a God encounter, which is all good, valid, it's wonderful, it's supernatural. But we ignore sometimes, you know, the actual informational aspects of the faith. You know, the Bible says to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, with all thy strength. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there are really important theological subjects, plus the Word of God itself, that reflect in a very rich way on what we believe and why. And why the Bible is important is because it records eyewitness testimony. You know, Judaism and Christianity are the only two faiths in the world that are rooted and grounded in historical fact. Mm-hmm. And when you read the Bible, it reads very much like an eyewitness account. You know, they differ on the details because they were seeing it from different angles. When Luke writes, you know, we were here and then we went there, you know, he's in the narrative. And then when he wasn't there, he says, well, we caught up with them at such and such a city. You know, no other so-called holy book really reads that way. So you get the sense that this is an action-packed adventure that's unfolding even as, you know, you're reading it. And so you sort of brought back to that time period, and it's often overlooked that it's a factual account of factual things that factually happened in history.
Yeah.
So and it's, they say things in the Bible like, we're not followers of cleverly invented fables, but we are eyewitnesses of His Majesty. John writes, that which we've handled, that which we have touched, this we declare to you concerning the word of life. There's so much like that in the Bible that people don't really know is what's happening. When Jesus says on the cross to John, John, behold thy mother. Mother, behold thy son, talking to Mary. You know, you get the sense that this is really a conversation that's happening while Jesus is being crucified. So the whole New Testament sort of has that ring of truth to it. And if you've seen enough trials, as I have, and if you've read enough action books, you know that that's sort of how these things, you know, really ring true. And you get the sense of adventure that goes along with it.
You know, does it matter what version you use to examine the Bible?
No, I mean, look, the version should be the version that speaks to you. All of the translations say fundamentally the same things. I prefer the NIV because, you know, that's sort of the language I speak, you know, 80s English, 80s college-level English. You know, that's sort of my genre. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I was young, the King James is so poetic, and it's got, like, sort of a Shakespearean quality. But as long as you're getting the communication of what's being said, it really doesn't matter, as long as it's an accurate translation.
Author Dan Buttafuoco on Consider the Evidence, a Trial Lawyer Examines Eyewitness Testimony in Defense of the Reliability of the New Testament. And when you're going back and researching, did you ever think to yourself, if I can witness one of these own things, one of these own depictions in the Bible with my own eyes, what would you go back to witness?
Oh, man, that's a great question. You know, I went to Israel, I think it was 2010, met some amazing people, walked those steps where Jesus walked. You know, that's as close as I think we can get, you know, most people, in terms of, you know, correlating the physical evidence with the narrative of what happened. But you know, of course, you think about what would it be like to be at the crucifixion? What would it be like to be at the Last Supper? You know, would I have denied Jesus, you know, when I'm threatened with, you know, maybe some sort of serious torture? You know, these things run through your head. And if they don't, you're not really reading the Bible for all it's worth.
Yeah, no, you're right. I look back at all of the different trips, and you know, people go and they'll go back to the Holy Land and they'll visit the site. So it sounds like you've done that a few times.
Yeah, we have some friends that are really connected over there. It's not a particularly religious group. It's just a sort of a historical, you know, sort of a semi-political private group, and we get to go behind the scenes and see some cool stuff. But you know, yeah, what I've been there, and I've been toured around by people who then later confessed to me they were secret believers, you know, that kind of stuff. So it was cool. I love it. I think every Christian, if they can, should really try to make that pilgrimage.
You know, there's a lot of people, and there's a lot of people online that like to post articles or videos of they're always searching for artifacts in that region to find things that may back up parts of the Bible and stories in the Bible. Does that fascinate you?
Yeah, and there's a lot of that, and that's why the book is called Consider the Evidence. You know, in other words, there's so much evidence for the faith, and that's the point that I want to drive home. You know, I'm a lawyer, and as a lawyer, I'm an evidence guy. So if I'm expert at anything, it's evidence and persuading. And there's so much evidence in the Bible to persuade us that it's the Word of God. I just basically just want people to look at it. You know, that's why we came up with that title, Consider the Evidence. It's like nobody's considering the evidence anymore. People get their opinions off of every unimaginable source, MTV, the guy in the cubicle next to them, some special where the people are teaching and they have no idea what they're talking about. And they don't bother to actually look at the hard facts. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make it real for people, give them like a layman's version of, you know, how to read the Bible. Like, this stuff is not new. I'm not taking any credit for it. This has been around for centuries, maybe millennia. But my skill set is to break it down to the average guy or person so that they can read it on the train going to work or whatever.
You know, something that bothers me, because I'm a Christian, and when I see the way Hollywood sometimes depicts the Bible or depicts faith, mainly Christian faith, or any faith really, I feel like they always do a terrible job of that, and I think that by doing a terrible job, they're misrepresenting a lot of what the faith is about, and it seems like they get it wrong all the time, but they do it in such a way, of course, to get people to watch or buy or whatever it may be. Do things like
motive,
that bother you?
Money.
Yeah. Does that bother you too?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when the motive is money, everything becomes messed up. And that's true of even evangelism, televangelism. You know, as soon as your motive shifts into making a buck, it colors everything that you do. Now, years back, I remember when I was a kid, there was some pretty realistic, I think, depictions of biblical stories. I think of the Ten Commandments and maybe King of Kings and some other, you know, movies that were well-made and gave dignity to the Word of God. But, you know, that's sort of, you know, blasé and passé today, and people want to juice it up and interject a twist, some kind of artistic thing that really veers it away from the truth. So basically, back to the evidence. Let's consider the evidence. Let's look at really what happened. Let's not fantasize about the Bible. We have the facts. It's like a trial record. It's like a transcript. We can read it for ourselves and make our own decisions.
You know, people want to find the book or your website. Where can they find you?
It's on Amazon. My name is sort of a famous name, Butterfuco. I'm not related to any more other famous or nefarious Butterfucos, but you remember that name very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And my name is Dan, so Daniel. And if you look it up on Amazon, Consider the Evidence. You can get it just about anywhere.
Yep, and ConsiderTheEvidenceBook.com is the website. You can get some links from there, too. Hey, Dan, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Oh, it's a pleasure being here. I hope people read this and give it out so people can get saved. That's the point.
Cool interview there. The Quiver River Electric guest line, he joins us on. Coming up, a few other things I want to get to. I'm not looking forward to this part of parenthood. There's a story on Fox 2 that I'm going to share with you, and a couple of text stories that'll get you a little squeamish. Yeesh, I'm warning you now. It's gross. It's Overnight America, KMOX. What were some of those things that you thought you would look forward to as a parent and then found out you really hated it? I feel like I'm about to find out one of those moments. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. I'm going to talk about that in a moment. I wanted to do this one because I didn't do it earlier. From KMOX.com, prospective St. Louis Major League Soccer team owner, hopeful for good news soon. Let's hope for good news. Worldwide Technology CEO Jim Cavanaugh would like the land design expansion fee, all of that worked out very soon. And there were some people traveling around the area, which is a good sign. When you get some people from the league traveling to St. Louis, he wants the Major League Soccer Commissioner Dan Garber to visit St. Louis to meet political and business leaders, potential sponsors, and to rally with fans. Rally! It means putting on the St. Louis scarf. Again, I guess it's cool. I don't know. Soccer scarves, I just don't get it. It's part of the soccer culture that I'm not part of, I guess. I played soccer in high school. I just don't understand the mass appeal of the scarves. It's just, I get it. It gets cold when you're outside at the game, but I don't know. I mean, it's cold inside of a hockey rink too, but you don't see scarves in there. Okay, so the request was the request that we have does not tax the general public, Kavanaugh noted. Individuals get taxed. We will only be those who go to the game or event at the stadium. Kavanaugh says having the Taylor family of enterprise is quite significant. He says you got a group here and looks like people are pretty serious. St. Louis might have recently gotten a boost this week, like St. Louis, the voters of San Diego have voted down a stadium proposal. The difference with St. Louis's, it wasn't even close. So San Diego goes down. St. Louis is ready to step in. Their bid for a Major League Soccer team is looking pretty strong by most indications. They still have that hashtag up, MLS for the Lou. Let's hope for it. All right, so Fox 2 posted this up. Here's the story. Some parents attending Friday night's football game in Wentzville said that it was the coldest game they can remember attending. Let's play this. I am not looking forward to this as a dad. I know my kid's going to play sports. I know he's going to enjoy doing it. I know I'm going to go to every game I can possibly attend, but I'm not looking forward to sitting in the cold to watch it.
Some dedicated parents out here at Timberland High School in Wentzville. Take a look. They are bundled up on a playoff night. Their team just scored a touchdown. Certainly they want to be out here rooting their kids on.
Well, most of these parents are stiff like a frozen hot dog right now. They are just, they are stiffed up, which I totally understand. And they're doing everything they can to stay warm.
But some said, yeah, we had some second thoughts about sitting on these ice cold bleachers all night.
It's the coldest game I remember.
When you have to blow snow off the bleachers before the game, that's when some parents say, are you kidding me?
You're lucky no kid licked one of those things like the old, you're going to shoot an eye out, kid. Christmas Story, where he goes and licks the pole and he gets his tongue stuck. That's kind of, I don't know if it's that cold yet, but it's getting there. Yeah, you got to sit on those cold benches. I'm not always one to prepare ahead of time. I would just go and sit down and I would just complain the whole time. Man, it's so cold. Man, it's so cold. And then my wife would complain to me. It's so cold. It's so cold. It's so cold. We should have brought the seat warmers. Oh, we should have brought the pads. We should have done this. Maybe I just have to prepare better. That way I can get there and not complain. But is there a way to do this and not complain? I don't know.
Really? We have to be this cold and it's basketball season. That's what I was thinking.
That's funny. The mom, I could have been indoors. This could have been inside. Oh boy, we better start fundraising now. Get a dome over this field.
Yeah, you're tearing up.
Fans bundled up in layers to support a team that's worked hard and is making a playoff run.
It's cold, but it's worth it. If they can handle it, so can I.
By the time the game was underway, temperatures were under the freezing mark, and wind chills dipped into the teens.
Okay. Not the coldest you'll ever see. I mean, we're not talking about, it's not the ice bowl here or anything like that, but it's still very chilly if you're not prepared for it. I still have to switch over to the winter jacket, which is in storage. I've been holding off getting it out of storage, but I'm going to have to finally get it out of storage because it's so cold out. So what my wife reminds me, you better not get sick. And then she says, what happens if you break down? You'll be walking around with that small jacket. You're going to kill yourself being out there when it's that cold. Yes, mom. I mean, wife. It's going to be one of those deals. This would be the same thing heading to one of these football games.
It is freezing and the snow is coming down. It's a little crazy.
One of the most popular spots was the concession stand, where they were stocked with plenty of warm beverages on a brutally cold night.
We have a lot. We have a lot of hot cocoa and a lot of coffee ready to go to keep everyone warm.
Some fans said the trick is when the temperatures drop, just keep adding layers.
I have like three comforters, a sleeping bag, I have a big overcoat. I think I'm ready.
Three comforters, a sleeping bag, and a giant coat. Who's bringing a sleeping bag to a football game? Bundle up. Start a campfire next. Maybe that could be the thing. Get a campfire going. Can you get an unused garbage bin, light it on fire hobo style, and just stand in front of it? You got to get one of those gloves where the fingers are exposed, right? The hobo gloves. And just stand in front and get there and stay warm.
This is great. This is why we're here. We've been waiting for this moment for these boys. They started playing football back in third grade, and this is their moment. So cold or not, we're out here supporting.
It's an amazing experience. I mean, anytime you can cheer on your own kid and watch him play in a district championship, it's just a great, great experience. I'm excited for the boys and happy to be here, even though it's freezing.
It is freezing. It is awfully cold out here, but the game going on, the weather not affecting the players on the field, as far as we can tell. We'll have your highlights coming up later in the Prep Zone.
Yeah, that was on Fox 2 from earlier. You know, I don't look forward to that. I know some parents love every single moment they can possibly get with their kid. I just do not look forward to that. Maybe you do. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. You know, as it turns out, they lost. So, in case you're wondering, yeah, Wentzville lost. The final score was 34-13. Yeah. Visiting Battle scored on its final three possessions in the first half. 34-13 win at Timberland, capturing its fifth consecutive district championship. So the parents are out there. It's cold. Yeah, I know. You got to see the kid, but they lost. I wonder if any parents went back and said, maybe I was the bad luck. Yeah, that was it. I was the bad luck. I should have stayed home. Oh, I jinxed the team. Oh, I should have stayed home. You'd have won if I would have stayed home. Oh, remember that. Isn't there live streams? Can't you just watch it on your cell phone in the car? You're still there. Do you have to go back to your car to heat up? Probably not. Got a couple of tech stories I want to share with you. This is going to make you squirm. Tiny robots where? Yeesh. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Got a couple tech stories to share with you. Yes, it's going to be cold. Come on. There's not much you can do about that. Can't control it. Did Carl Babinski from AccuWeather confirm they have a weather-manipulating machine and it's all a giant conspiracy and they actually control things? No, he didn't? No? Okay. Winter weather advisory kicks off at 6 a.m. as if there's a big countdown for it. We need to start going backwards and doing the giant countdown like it's for the ball dropping on New Year's Eve. 10, 9, 8. Happy slush day! Well, that's what we're going to see. After morning commute, at least that's their latest projections, which was good that they had it that way. I'm going to be off the next couple of nights. We're going to have a couple of different guest hosts. Brad Young, I think, will be doing it for a few days. And also Gary Nolan will be doing it for the other. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'll be filling in Mark's slot with Carol Daniel and Amy Markscore. So the three of us will do a show. And we've done a couple of shows before. Just a couple of late night at your service. You've heard a couple of these talks. Like, even Walter Sterling was doing a show on Thursday night from 8 to 10 leading into Overnight America. And yeah, it's fun. So we did a couple of those shows together. We had some fun. So we'll be filling in for Mark the next couple of days. Looking forward to it. You ready for this creepy story? You're not going to like it. Let me just put it this way. There's tiny robots that are getting ready to swim in your... Take a guess. I'll give you 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1. Eyeball. Scientists have created tiny robots that swim in your eye. I don't know if this is a good thing or bad thing. I guess if you're having issues and you're out of options, maybe having a option's a good idea. Says, although the mere thought of a swarm of micro-robots burrowing into an eyeball is enough to make some people squirm, scientists believe tiny, controllable delivery vehicles could be the future of eye medicine. Oh, man, I don't know if I want that. Eye medicine? It's different than putting the drops in, I guess. So scientists use nanoscale 3D printing to create spiral-shaped robots small enough to pass through the dense jelly known in the eye to make up most of the eyeball. So they added a slippery coating to this magnetic material, and then they use magnet to get these little robots to the back of your eye. So here is from Science Magazine explaining what's going on. It's just looking at the pictures of it makes me feel ill.
The bots were nearly 200 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair.
200 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair. Think about that.
Their tiny size and a nonstick coating made it easier for them to pass through the tight matrix of the vitreous humor. The spiral bots also contained magnetic material, which meant the researchers could drive them forward, backward, left, or right.
You know, it reminds me of those little toys you had as a kid where it showed that one dude's face, and then you had the little magnetic wand and the little metal shavings on the other end, and you would, you know, manipulate where the shavings went to make it look like he had a beard or a mohawk or whatever. It's kind of like that, I guess, except a lot more creepier and... It's almost like a horror movie.
With a magnetic field. The scientists injected a solution containing around 10,000 of the spiral bots into eyes collected from pigs and put the eyes in a magnetic field.
It's horrifying. The pictures of this is horrifying, though. They got a bunch of these eyeballs on these special little frames, and they inject it in there, and they watch these little things go back. I don't want to tell you what they look like, but think of something that squirms in liquid. I don't want to get too gross, but they have these things, and it basically, they're almost like a corkscrew in shape, and they move through the eyeball towards the back. So apparently when they administer some sort of medicine into the eye, they'll inject it with a syringe, but what happens is it doesn't evenly distribute, and it might not get to the back of the eye. So instead they said, we're going to jam this medicine in these tiny robots and push them to the back.
They used imaging techniques and dissection to see if the bots had been able to pass through the eyeball's jelly all the way to the back where the light-sensing retina lives.
What about this music?
The bots were able to deliver their cargo to the right place in much less time than simple diffusion would allow. Next, the researchers are planning to test the spiral bots in a living animal's eye.
Ooh, I like they make it sound like a heartbeat. Tom calling in from Ohio. What's going on, Tom?
Yeah, a couple things. First of all, Ryan, what you're talking about right now, if they can perfect it in my lifetime, I might be able to benefit from it. I got my glasses, new prescription, last January.
Yeah.
And or December, rather. And I had floaters, you know, for some years.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, decades. And then about 5 years ago, I started getting a few more of them. And the optometrist I went to originally said, well, you know, unless you get a lot of them, a lot of sparks and that, don't worry about it because, you know, it's just part of the tissue that was there from when you were born. And if you see sparks, then you get a problem because it'd be the retina detaching. Well, the last optometrist I went to had a more computerized deal, and he's showing me my eyeball, and he says those are calcium deposits.
Ew.
Somehow, I talked with another optometrist over the radio, who was a guest of another show, and he said that was there from birth. So, I mean, I'm trying to think of how do you delete calcium from your eyeballs?
Yeah.
Because, you know, at times it's bothersome. I mean, you know, it's like seeing little black dots and at times more prominent than others.
Yeah.
But you know, you think there's something there and there's nothing there, you know, in front of you.
How long do they last for?
No, it's permanent.
Oh, so you see black dots all the time?
Well, it depends. They sort of float around. So, you know, I guess I'm used to looking in a way that I fool my mind that it's not there. But say I'm reading or something like that, or if it's a bright day, then I really see them, and then I'll see them for the whole day that way.
These make it sound like this is more for administering medicine. So, like,
but
normally...
I understand that, but yeah. once they get it perfected, then possibly they could use it, you know, for some other purposes like mine.
Oh, maybe. It sounds like they just these are the delivery method for this medicine. So you can inject something into the eye and it just distributes, or you can force
that,
it to the back.
The other part of it is, you know, if they can make tiny robotic devices that they can move around, then possibly they can, you know, I don't know, put a little chisel with them, or maybe have a solution that would actually dissolve the calcium.
Oh, maybe. Or
hey, one other thing, real quick. Our American story over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The Traveling Wilburys. Have you ever heard of them?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Okay, because I never did.
Oh, really?
Who's the fifth one? I got Roy Orbison, Tom Petty, Bob Dylan, and George Harrison.
I think Jeff Lynne was the last one.
That could be.
Yeah, I think he would have been the last one you're missing.
What is he known for? Because I've never heard of his name before.
Was Jeff Lynne ELO? I'll have to double check that. But yeah, I think it was ELO. There was this big time super group. Let me look. You didn't know of the Traveling Wilburys?
No. Well, I mean, you know, quite frankly, I get away from music for decades because I was concentrating on work. I was concentrating on getting my education, I was listening to the radio, talk radio, but I wasn't listening to music radio. Mm-hmm.
So Jeff Lynne, yeah, he was from ELO, and they're doing a Roy Orbison thing here in Branson. They got a traveling hologram Roy Orbison going around, and then they'll have a permanent one. I wonder if they'll play any of his music from the Traveling Wilburys. That'd be cool.
But what's neat about it is that on that album, they don't even have their real names.
Oh, they don't?
I just wonder if people at the time realized who it was.
Oh, yeah, I think so. Maybe, but I wasn't around to know. I never really heard of any stories where they didn't realize who it was. It's kind of hard to hide a Bob Dylan in a Tom Petty. You know, it's like,
well,
I don't know.
No, I know.
Disguise those voices.
Have you heard the name Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet?
No.
Okay. Well, they're before your time, but they were very popular singers.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of got pushed to the sideline because nobody, you know, figured that, well, people just don't listen to your music anymore.
Yeah.
Well, they went, created an album and a couple songs under the names Parker and Penny.
Uh-huh.
And one of them was a real hit. But the DJs were, you know, just calling up Parker and Penny. They didn't realize it was Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet.
Oh, wow. That's funny. I don't think you'd have to do that anymore. People love hearing new stuff from old artists anymore.
Yeah, you would think so. But, I mean, you know, a lot of it's driven by, you know, a lot of it is driven by whoever controls the schedule as opposed to what the public wants.
Whatever's new and noteworthy at the time, people really grasp onto those things.
Well, it's a whole different medium today, too, though. I mean, the control isn't by the program director at the station. It's a matter of, you know, whatever music you pull out of the air or off the internet.
Oh, yeah, some of the streaming things. What songs did you like from the Traveling Wilburys? What did they play? Do you remember?
You know, they only played parts of it because of the fact that it was Our American Story that they were. You know, they were talking about how it came about and who was in it. And, I just found it interesting. You know, it was really a coincidental type situation where two of them agreed to do something, and they stopped off to get the guitar at somebody else's place, and the three of them were there, and they bumped into a couple of the other two, and then, I want to do this. And, you know, pretty soon you had five guys who independently, that's been done a number of times along the way.
Yeah.
But usually it's with the names attached to the label.
Is Jeff Lynne still around? Is he still alive? Yeah, he's still alive. Okay, so I guess him and Bob Dylan are still alive. I think everyone else would have been gone.
Yeah, they would. The three would be.
Yeah,
Tom Petty just died not too long ago, didn't he?
Yeah, Tom Petty last year, right around October. It was the same time as that.
Harrison's dead, and Roy Orbison is dead for some time.
Yeah.
Hey, anyway, have a good
couple
home,
days.
Home away from home for a while, and I'll start tuning in next week again. As I said, I won't be calling you as often as I did, but I'll be sitting back listening.
Okay. Sounds good, Tom. Good to hear from you.
Take care, sir.
Right. Bye. Okay. There we go. Eyeballs. We go from eyeballs to handle me with care. One other eyeball story for you, because I had these two together, and I might as well just do it real quick because, you know, I've sat on this story for like 3 weeks. Permanent contact lenses are now FDA approved. Apparently, a trucker here in St. Louis was the very first person to get one. It's kind of cool, right? Handle me with care. It's a song about your eyeballs, and you're making sure you're going to the optometrist. Isn't it So an Illinois trucker, but he's, I think, from the St. Louis region, didn't like wearing contacts, so he finally got these permanent contact lenses because he couldn't do lasers. Kind of cool, right? Better than eyeball robots. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.